we are back on the air. Did you have any further questions, Congresswoman Lemon?
Not right now, but thank you.
Okay. Congressman?
Just briefly, I don't want to get bogged down by this. I'm a little intrigued by the apartment lease. I mean, what? Okay. Briefly describe that.
Fair question. That's not a reality yet because there's always flies in the ointment, like what's the liability to the nation if someone stays in their apartment? We're leasing. But aside from that, it's a way to try to lessen the impact of the commute I just talked about. If we are leasing an apartment and someone wants to stay there one day a week, so they're only commuting 3 days a week because we have a 4-day work week for our providers, then they could stay in the apartment one night. Or if we hire locums tenants and we feel like that we have no other place for them, they could stay there and it lessens our rate that we pay per hour if we provide housing. Many places we provide housing. We're paying an all-inclusive rate, which includes housing, so we don't have to pay that because we don't really have a place, to be honest with you. But I'd like to have one place at our command that we could have that as a way to say, hey, if you come over, the one that's coming in June has already been interested and attracted by that. If she wanted to lessen her commute one or two nights a week and it wasn't otherwise spoken for, she would stay there. No specific fee or charge, but simply a way to be able to have them stay and try to offset that commute. That's all it was. It's very simple, but it sounds kind of outrageous, but I mean, again, that's what I feel like I'm commuting against is a commute.
Sounds reasonable.
Mm-hmm. I want to add on to that too, because it's not just providers. We have a lot of staff at the clinic that commute from Claremore and Broken Arrow and because of the specialty, you can't find them locally, then they're willing to drive. And we had one that was commuting from Oklahoma City for a while, and that's hard. It's hard on a person. And a lot of the other, especially Indian Health Services, they have housing for their physicians, especially their locums that come in.
Which ones?
They do up north, a couple of reservations up north. I know Pine Ridge does for sure, and I'm wondering if Lawton does it because they would have access to housing.
Because I know too. In Santa Fe there was not, and we had a lot of locums coming.
Well, just like Dr.
And the salary was much less, too.
Well, just like Dr. Shaw said, though, it'll lessen your requirement when you're paying the agencies that are coming in if you have something there. And we haven't had it for a lot of people, and it's been hard on them to come up and pay to stay here while they're working here. So.
You mean the locums don't, like nurses, their agency doesn't pay the housing?
We pay it. It comes in our fees. Yes, I'm sorry.
It's okay, thank you. I believe that what you may be alluding to, Mrs. Tallchief, Ms. Tallchief, is that you have the option sometimes when you have these locums come in that and if it hasn't been offered here, it's something that's negotiable that I know of just from being in medicine, healthcare for a while, is that you can't, there are places that do pay for their contractors a place to stay. And so and the reason you know that is because you yourself went on a travel and you stayed in a place where they put her, where they put Ms. Tallchief up in a cottage. Did they own the cottage? Well, I don't know, but that may be something that Lawton and Pine Ridge do. They may own it, and then a piece of the fee comes out is considered part of their contract as the whole price of what the facility would have to pay. So it just depends on the locum tenens that you utilize, and then if you negotiate it in the contract, is my understanding. There's options that we have to offer housing possibly.
Anyone else?
So I just had this to give you an overview of the things that are going on, what my strategies are, what we're trying to offer, how I see the major obstacles are. As far as equipment, there's an equipment list or an equipment sheet, just as it was presented to last sheet, last page. And it's just a single spaced sheet of equipment that we received approval from the health authority to purchase. And I'll just hit the highlights here, not every single place on there. But you can see a mammogram unit is on there. And the one we have priced at is $344,000. And it is made by Hologic. It is a 3D mammography unit, which is state-of-the-art. Hologic is also state-of-the-art. And this we have room in our x-ray department to install this mammogram unit, and it would take the place of the mobile unit that's parked once a month outside the clinic that does not have a wheelchair lift, incidentally. So we'd be able to screen all patients with state-of-the-art equipment. Now, I've been asked before about, well, is this, you know, business plan for the mammogram? Are we going to be doing enough mammograms to pay for the equipment? Because ordinarily, if you're going to invest in a piece of equipment or a service or something, particularly if you've got anything that's quasi-retail where you can bill, you'd like to think it's going to be enough to pay for it. In this situation, I can tell you right now, we're not going to have enough mammograms to bill for it. We're going to try to recruit people. But I'm not sure that we had all, did all the mammography screening in Pawhuska, we had enough to pay for it. This is a way to get our women out of the van. This is a way to get our women in wheelchairs screened. This is a state-of-the-art service to offer our patients. That's it, pure and simple. That's where we're making the decision.
Yes, go ahead,
Commissioner.
Okay. I'm looking down a little bit, I'm looking at equipment, and I have that circle because I don't want you to take this as criticism. It's not, it's just really kind of questions. And I've always been very upfront. Like, I was born into IHS. I've had a chart since birth over at Pawnee. And even though I've always had insurance, I still use the clinic. And I still use the clinic now. And I will always, and so does my son, who also has insurance through his dad, but that's where we feel comfortable. That's home for us. And other than the not having a wheelchair lift for the mobile unit, and I've utilized that as well. I guess my first question is how often does this piece of equipment see upgrades? Like, I know there's certain pieces of equipment that may become like almost obsolete after 1, 2, 3 years. So the new technology is vastly improved, and then you're stuck with something that's like really old and outdated very quickly. That would be my first question. How often does this piece of equipment change? And then just kind of, I'm going to segue just a little bit down, because I see that nitrous oxide is now offered in dentistry, and I'm happy about that, because for a long time, any of us that have really utilized IHS or even compacted clinics, there were no options for when you had problems with your teeth except for to pull. That was it. That was the option. You get your teeth pulled. And people that that are having problems, you know, they're nervous. Unless you really know someone who they go in and they're sitting in that chair and they're like literally they have so much anxiety about going to the dentist. So I'm really happy to see that this is offered. I'm thinking about the parents that, when are we going to get braces for our kids? And I've been there and done that with my son. It's a huge expense, $5,000. Like, that is it. But not just that though. We have parents who live in Pawhuska or Hominy or Fairfax, and I think Fairfax. Does Fairfax offer braces? Do they have a dentist there?
Yes.
I think, okay.
Dr. Ben.
So Hominy people, and I'm just using this as an example. You know, we've got a track to Bartlesville, Owosso. The nearest place is Skytook. So if a parent doesn't really have good reliable transportation, or you know, doesn't have the $5,000. I know for me, I had to let my Joseph's benefit card roll over for the 3 years just to make the down payment to get the braces on. So I'm not really speaking for myself, except for I've paid that for my child. But I think that is something that could really, I mean, really benefit our Osage families to have something like that. And maybe we're not even anywhere close to being able to offer something like that. Maybe, I don't know, that I don't ever want to hear that it's impossible. I hope that it is possible at some point in time to offer orthodontists for our Osage kids, because it's their smile. And
their self-esteem.
And for some of them, yes, it's their smile, it's their self-esteem, and, you know, and it's important. I mean, it's it's really important. And I see a lot of kids go without braces because they, you know, their parents just can't afford it. If they've got more than one child, that's an even bigger expense. So, but I am happy that y'all are offering nitrous oxide for people to come in and need it, because I think that that's, I think it's needed. It helps people to feel it more at ease when they're gonna sit there and do something that they dread going to do. So, just comments,
I've been assured by the rep that this equipment is upgradable.
Okay.
I'm not aware that any other technology other than mammography is being used for routine screening. And the 2D has been the standard forever. 3D offers more detail. You've heard of CAT scan, computed axial tomography. This is 3D breast mammography or tomosynthesis that actually gives more detail and reduces false positives, reduces callbacks for additional imaging, and is sufficient for those women who have dense breast tissue found in a mammogram who need additional imaging. The 3D imaging is sufficient for both of those, so they don't have to be sent for yet another test at another facility in Bartlesville or Tulsa. So that's why I say state of the art. This, you could get a 3D and a 2D image out of one scan. And I think that will still be the equipment of choice for many years to come. And then as far as the dental, I've always said that I believe the reason that IHS dentists got a black eye is their solution for fixing anything was to pull the tooth, mm-hmm. is because they really don't have options. The base funding for that from our funding agreement really is dental restorations like cavities, pulling teeth, prophylaxis, routine exams, and x-rays. And of course, we've got a nice x-ray machine with that 3D Panorex that this Congress appropriated for a couple of years ago. But when it comes to dental lab, bridges, dentures, crowns, not covered. And so we have started a program just in this last 6 to 8 months to where if I need a crown, Dr. Lewis can do all the preparatory work, but we are contracted with the dental lab where we will offer that cost to the patient at cost. So instead of a $500 or $600 crown fee, it's $150. Patient has to pay that, and that's pretty common. But what they're getting is dental lab fees at a greatly reduced discount that would be difficult to afford if they just went to Bartlesville with no dental insurance and tried to get it.
And they can use their health benefit card for that?
They can use their health benefit card, too. So it goes a lot further. So we've got more options than just pulling the teeth. I didn't do everything, but, I mean, crowns are pretty common, right? Bridge work might be. And so it's given us some more options. Patient has to pay, but it's at a greatly reduced price. It's usually like a 400% retail market with the dentist for the dental lab products they get.
He also does some implants. There's the whole menu that they can pick from. And all that they're responsible for are the lab fees. That's huge.
He doing implants now?
Yes, he can do implants too.
He is?
Yes.
You can make an appointment?
Yes. Also wanted to make a comment real quick too about mammography, because I've been on that soapbox for years, Dr. Shaw can tell you. This offsets those mammograms that we're paying for the van. So we've got money we've been spending to have mammograms done. Now we'll have a machine to do them ourselves. So we'll collect on those insurances, but it also saves us that cost. It offsets that cost.
Okay, so we pay for the Conza?
Yes.
Okay,
yes.
I didn't know that. That was a question that I had.
No, that wasn't Conza. That was OU Breast Care. And so they've always, you know, and it's a trial to get the van to fit into a schedule. And if you get a day that's canceled, you've lost that day. They have a hard time making that up again. So this is an opportunity to get those women, while they're captured at the clinic, to say, we can go ahead and do your mammogram right now and stuff. So I think it's a huge advancement for us.
So I have one more question about
yes.
it. So how are you all going to advertise that, Dr. Shaw? Like, what are you all... are y'all utilizing Osage News so that people know that the discounts that are, say there's someone who has insurance but they haven't used the clinic in years, but I would think that even if I lived an hour or so from here, because even with insurance, you still, if you're going to get a crown or whatever, implants, that's a huge out-of-pocket expense, even with insurance. I mean, even with the insurance. So I would think that that is something that more people need, because I go to the clinic and I didn't know that they could do that at the dentist. So if I don't know, and I work up here, I'm on, you know, like I'm just now hearing it, how are y'all gonna start your advertisements for all these little things, like once we get the mammogram equipment installed and then the things that the dentist is offering now?
Ads online, employee announcements, Sage Nation News, I mean, all those. You know, we haven't advertised that yet, but I can see the reason, because we still need to build our business in dentistry. The volume's not there yet. Mm-hmm. But that's a good marketing point, because really, most of the time, dental insurance will pay 50% of the mm-hmm. crown. And that half will still be more than the cost price from the dental lab. Mm-hmm.
All right, and I know women that are good about going to get a mammogram for a while, and then they're like, yeah, I don't feel like going to Tulsa, especially as they get a little older. They're like, I just don't want to deal with South Tulsa traffic or this or that. And now, when we get this, it's a 20-minute trip or 10-minute trip, or, you know, to Pawhuska. So I would think that they're going to be interested in that too, but they're going to have to, they got to know, especially if they haven't been utilizing the clinic in a while.
Thank you. So I just want, for the listening audience, if we have anybody out there to, this is exciting news for our people, for our clinic, and correct me if I'm wrong, Dr. Shaw, but this was actually able to be a diagnostic mammogram also for the women that would necessarily have to, if they had the screening, this is able to be a more of a, you made a mention earlier of women that have really dense breasts, because there's some women that don't even go through the screening process. They just go directly to, you know, get a diagnostic because of the breast mass that they have. The dense breasts. So ultimately, you're able to get a better picture of it, since offered to our women. Is that not correct?
Better picture of it.
The imaging, yes.
And there's a state law that actually requires that you advise the patient that they have dense breast tissue on their mammogram and that they may require additional imaging. State law. Mm-hmm. It doesn't require the patient to have to get additional imaging, but they have to be advised because of that they are at increased risk of breast cancer. And so the 3D is another type of imaging, 2D and 3D.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, probably people that don't have 3D or have access to it get whole breast ultrasound. But as far as the diagnostic mammogram, my understanding is that requires a radiologist on site to do a diagnostic mammogram. So we would only be doing screening.
Okay. May I continue?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. So with the mammogram coming, and Alice kind of segued into some options and for dental, some other things to look at, some opportunities maybe for our people, and then you've opened up the segue for letting our folks know out there that are listening, and the possible advertisement of the increased dental options that our people have. I feel this is just off the top of my head that this mammogram is an opportunity. This mammogram machine, this new 3D Tomo mammogram, is, and the reason I see it as an opportunity is because I feel that we aren't capturing the women. A lot of the women, like I know from working in the clinic, some statistical data that we would go over at times is that we don't have, a lot of our women aren't compliant. Alice alluded to it earlier. And so, because they may have to drive, or they don't want to go here.
I didn't say they weren't compliant.
Well, they're not.
I'm just kidding.
They're not.
That's your words.
And it's not anything against them. It's just a simple fact is we don't know what's going on in their life or their barrier as to why they are or are not compliant. What I'm getting at is that I see this as an opportunity to get more women in to our facility, and women that have insurance and able to bill it. And I see it unfortunately, I mean, I disagree respectfully with you concerning the fact that it's not going to be a possible money-making, you know, something to look forward to. I think that it's an opportunity for you to take that and segue that and trying to get more women in, to get your compliance in, you know, numbers up, and then to also consider at some point in time, because I believe that it is possible to use this particular program only to offer mammogram to women that aren't necessarily Native. Because you do have that opportunity, and so it was, and it's something that is not here anywhere. So you could have other people come in that would have insurance that you would be able to bill and collect on. And insurance is paid for women to get their mammograms. And so, one other question that I do have for you, Dr. Shaw, is when you do have this mammogram, will other IHS facilities be able to utilize it? As in, let's say Pawnee has women that go to the clinic there but live here, you know, or live in Pawnee but they want to come to the new mammogram clinic up here. Is that an option that they're going to have?
Yes.
As a referral type service?
I think it's under the open door policy to where IHS or tribal policy facility, and we offer a service that we're required to offer it. I'm certainly willing to offer that. I think that to be able to get the volume up, we're going to need that. Right now, people are sending patients to Pawnee, say the Kansas Clinic or Iowa Clinic. Everybody's sending patients, but they wanted to send it to the Washaji Health Center and take advantage of the 3D technology. We would be open to that.
Thank you.
How would that work? If we had patients, if you all had patients from another clinic, and say someone, they're Native, but they don't have insurance, could you get, I almost hate to even ask this question, but I'm going to. Do you all get money from that clinic for sending someone over instead of them referring out to Tulsa?
My preference is to build the clinic.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
They come up with an arrangement going, you know, we're going to do this. You like our service. You like our interpretations. You like the technology. We know that you could send it over to Pawnee and would not cost you anything. This is a cost for us to run mammograms. We've got the equipment, the overhead, the training, and the space. If you want to use us, let's work out an agreement to where we can provide a discounted price and still take care of your patients. I mean, in the perfect world, we do everything for everybody for free. But again, we do have some expenses we're trying to offset. So I would try to come up with an agreement. Because up here, I don't know of any other tribal clinics except maybe, and probably not even the tribal clinics in Nowata or Kuiskewi. They don't have mammography. They'll have to go back to their hospital in Tahlequah, Hastings, to have that kind of image. We'll be one of the few tribal clinics of that size that has mammography. And ordinarily, you try to send it to an IHS facility so you can get it for no charge. If we've got it, hey, the Osages have mammography. Let's try to send them over there. I'm not sure I want to be everyone's mammography provider in the region unless we can come to some agreement. I'd like to come to some kind of an agreement.
Because they're paying the van right now if they're having their van.
So well, and insurance.
I say I hate to ask that question because I'm a believer that I believe that good health care is a basic human right and need. And so I'm not, but I realize that there is a fine line there of there's also a cost and we also have to be very smart about it. But I'm glad I'm sitting on this side and not over there.
Congressman, our capacity to perform these new dental services is very exciting. I'm excited about that because all my teeth when I was a kid got fixed at IHS, and it wasn't the best of care at that time. And I recall the limitations and all throughout my life that the IHS dental clinics have had. We're not taking adults now. We're only taking diabetic patients now, which I understand probably was an element of the funding. How are we doing in our Osage clinic with the capacity of people to be able to call and get appointments with our dentist, especially in light of the new services that we offer? And so I guess we just have one dentist right now and just one dental office and lab. I don't know how many chairs we have in there right now. So how are we doing with people calling in, needing appointments to see the dentist? Are they ranging far out? Do we have the capacity to serve the people? Because I think it's a good idea to advertise the new things we can do, but if we're running one dentist, it's going to be rather difficult depending on his patient load. So that's my curiosity. What's our capacity there?
Well, we decided not to advertise the nitrous. We didn't know who'd show up for treatment.
But as far as
Dr. Lewis has told me, usually you see people within 5 working days. Unfortunately, we seem to have a significantly high no-show rate in dentistry. I'm not sure why that is, but even despite that, we have a significant capacity. We could double and
okay.
not have any significant
Wonderful.
Wait. So there's not a backlog. There's not a long wait in dentistry. And Dr. Lewis, he's recently completely had to repopulate his staff. He lost his receptionist, his dental hygienist, his dental assistant. Daniel and I got the wheels rolling with HR and getting these job descriptions tweaked and re-advertised and market analysis updated. And finally, he's got a new staff. I went back there one day and he was seeing patients by himself. There was no one back there. I was just, I'm going, well, there's a lot of dentists wouldn't even do that. They just say, if I don't have anybody, I don't see how I could work. But he was doing the best he could. I don't think he would have done a high-risk procedure, but I mean, he was seeing patients because he had no staff. So anyway, he's fully staffed now. We've got the nitrous ready to go. We're going to be looking at having new flooring put in within the next, I'd say, 3 to 4 months, in clinic-wide. You see on this list also, there's new roof. We're still trying to finagle about that. You know, we pay space costs. Okay, we pay almost $1 million in indirect costs out of that clinic per year. And there's some things I'm just not ready to pay for unless because I think maybe the nation should help us with that. On our building, everything from a roof to air conditioning to help with flooring. But ultimately, when you're told that we don't have enough money for that, you can either go without or you can see if you can help dredge up the funds yourself from your federal funds.
That's a point well taken. Thanks for answering the stuff about dentistry. I'm real excited that we have capacity to serve our people. And yes, I think we do need to get to the bottom of what is actually the policy on space cost and indirect cost and have some clear guidelines. Because those are curiosity questions that come up year after year during the SHISO session when we're funding the nation about what exactly does this money do. So I think some clear guidance would be good on that to know.
Good comment.
Thank you, Dr. Shaw.
Before we go on, too, I want to say, too, Dr. Lewis also sees patients on immediate appointments for those with emergency need. Mm-hmm. So they can walk in at any time, and we'll go ahead and see if they get taken care of.
We love them.
Yes, he's wonderful. We really need
Here's
to be
my new
proud
glasses from our optometry. First pair of glasses that I've ever had in my life. Right here.
They're cute, too.
Very Joseph nice. Got some, too.
Very nice.
We've got, the new the new dental clinic and all its equipment that Congress appropriated for. At the same time, we've got the dental upgrades and the chairs and so forth. Since then, we've added what's called an auto-refractometer, which allows the optometrist to gauge the curvature of the cornea so he could fit contact lenses. So I've told him in the next 30 days I'm going to begin fitting patients and offering contact lenses.
Isn't that huge?
Yes.
Wonderful.
That is like...
It will be somewhat at cost or so forth, but before he didn't even have the equipment, he had this auto-refractometer, and also the one you put your glasses on and it can actually give an approximation of the vision for those glasses. And he starts from there, then fine-tunes the prescription.
Well, so I think that you're going to have to do some marketing with your optometry, too, because I know Joseph's dad has always worn glasses, like, since he was 15, 16. So he hasn't gone to the clinic in years. And this is just me, just one case. I know there's more out there. Years because of the selection. Right, so like think about, I'm almost 45. The selection when we were young was just not good. I mean, really. But now the selection is just incredible. And so Joe will use his entire health benefit card, like all $500 going over to Sand Springs to get his eyes checked and then picking out his glasses. And actually, he lets his roll over too, and he'll spend almost $1,000 because he'll, you know, he's got really bad eyes. So he had gone with Joseph recently, and he was like, no idea that the frames had changed. Like, that we have such a benefit here with selection. And he was just like, this is great. And so, but again, And he was like, okay, well, I just spent $800 getting two new pair of glasses and my eyes checked at Sand Springs. So next year when I go to get my eyes checked, I'm coming here. So really targeting those people that have used IHS, but, and I say IHS because that's what it was when they used it. And now we have all these great, wonderful new things and pulling them back. Because I know he's already committed to, I'm going to set an appointment for next year when I'm here and it's time to get my eyes checked and bring my health benefit card up here. And that's what we did. But there's so many people that just don't know about what's being offered now.
You know.
And contacts are, that's a big reason people don't go to the clinic anymore to get their eyes checked. Because another place won't take a prescription from you all to, they want to get their eyes checked by them. So I think that's just a huge benefit to offer contacts. People are going to be really excited about that.
Yes. When Barbara was up at the clinic, Barbara, I don't remember, what's her last name?
Shadow.
We don't need to talk about her though.
She was in optometry. A lot of people didn't know this. She could order almost any kind of glasses she wanted. I'd go to the high dollar thing down at in Utica Square, find what it was that I wanted and tried it, take it and give it to her, and she could order from the company and get it at cost.
Yeah.
So there's lots of options if people see something that, and this, they may be able to do it here.
We're almost at the end of our time. Dr. Shaw, do you want to go ahead and continue?
Yeah, let me just try to finish up, and again, I may want to give a abbreviated report on the clinic manager's report. Let me just skip that piece here. Purchase and refer care. We had a lot of talk about it when people signed up. We started that October 1st, so now we're into our fifth month, and we have processed a lot of claims. There was some delay in getting all the proper bank accounts checked. Set up, checked in. I mean, you even have to have Bank of Oklahoma set to where it can read the font under checks because it's all automated. That took, it seemed like 3 weeks just to get the font size corrected so they could read the checks. What you would think would be a simple process just kept taking 2 to 3 week delays here and there. So the first claim checks were actually sent out last week, as shocking as that is. You know, Indian Health Service wasn't paying any claims during the government shutdown. So I don't want to contribute to the reputation that the Indians don't pay well. So we're real sensitive to that, right? But one of the reasons that the health authority wanted to take over this program is to provide a better patient experience. Well, we've had a sputtering start, but now that we've got all these administrative IT issues out of the way, we're hoping that'll run smooth and we get those paid regularly and perform better than Indian Health Service. That was our goal. Because you don't generate any money off of purchase and revert care. That's not a revenue maker. Revenue just goes out for services that are provided outside the clinic. Has anyone received their purchase and referred care benefit card? Our version of the Pawnee benefit. Oh, you got the
form. He's talking about the packet.
It's just a two-page.
Yeah.
No, the card.
No, I haven't gotten the card.
No one's got the card?
I haven't seen anything in yet, but that's because I haven't. I got your initial letter.
I just saw my wife's little stash.
Here's what the cards look like. This is designed by Paula Stabler, I might add.
Get that sent in.
I know.
And so, if you've ever seen the Pawnee benefit card, it's gray, raised addressograph type stuff, kind of government-like card.
Cool.
And so we tried to go more, I should say Paula, wanted to go more colorful and attractive than that. That's what the finished product looks like. So the backs are all the same, but the front will have different names on it. Do you see, you want to see this?
I see, but I had to have a question about it too, because my mail goes to my husband's office, and sometimes I see it and sometimes I don't. So if I had Pawnee Benefit down through, when it was over at Pawnee, should I have received those documents that you're, because I don't necessarily have a chart, I do have a chart up there, but my kids.
We're just having people, we were having people reestablish for this program, because to be covered, you have to be, it depends on what tribe you are and where you live. You could be Osage, but you live in, if you live in Tulsa County, we're not responsible for your purchase of referred care, even though you're Osage. It could be a Cherokee lives in Pawhuska is covered, but not an Osage in Tulsa County or lives in Claremore. So we try to reestablish residence location about every 2 to 3 years.
But it's always been that way. That wasn't a change that you all did.
But that's why we had everyone sign up when we took over.
Are you still providing grace period?
Oh, you don't really, if you had something unexpected come up, you could fill that out at any time. You don't have to have this card in the billfold to be covered.
But it's better if you do.
So
I'm going to go home and fill my paperwork out. So
are those documents that you guys have available online that I can click into your portion of the website?
That's a great idea. They are. Daniel says he thinks they are.
Okay, thank you, Daniel. I'll go ahead
it's
and do that.
It's a two-pager. It's really not that onerous to fill out, and then you could get your own card. You know, the card, the reason we had this card is it really doesn't guarantee payment. Even the old Pawnee Benefit card said does not guarantee payment, and so does ours on the back. But people had the security of the Pawnee Benefit card over years and felt better if they had that. So we wanted them to have an Osage PRC card.
Yes,
I have. I have one more quick question, and if you guys have covered it and I missed it at the beginning of the meeting, but it was about the referred care. Let me see, purchasing referred care. You have a little paragraph here. I don't think that we've really talked about that in depth since your time here. But my curiosity is, it says that you've completed the first quarter and you're under the budget amount. You know, at times I have used Pawnee Benefit or used the referral system and ended up getting notices that I owed the provider when I didn't have knowledge that they hadn't been paid. Do we have safeguards in place to help our Osage people or the people that use this service to not get into those situations? I never understood how I got into that situation when they made a referral out of Pawnee for me to these providers. And then in the end, I was in collections on the bill that they referred me to. So I never knew how that situation happened, but is our program gonna be able to safeguard for our people those situations popping up?
I guess our safeguard was we have a different fiscal intermediary than Indian Health Service. They have Blue Cross and Blue Shield nationally. We use tribal MLR that helps us scrub our claims, so we pay only Medicare-like rates. And then when we receive the claim or bill from the provider, we send a purchase order, and then a check follows soon thereafter. And our goal is to pay claims every 2 weeks.
Right. So,
but I'm surprised you didn't ever get a bill before. I mean, people were being turned to collection. That was the experience that we're having.
Right. Yes.
I think we've all probably been there.
Yeah. So that's what we're trying to prevent.
That's why I was asking. We've got some safeguards because that's a terrible place to feel, because when you have that referred care, you aren't expecting to pay anything out of your pocket. I never was anyway. It was never presented to me that. You might possibly have some
should
pending.
Should be pre-approved.
But that's what I was going to say.
It always was.
So,
but I have had experiences
insight, yeah.
Where
we can give you some insight.
Okay.
We worked in the PRC.
Can we're going to do
ahead.
Better.
So,
okay.
Ultimately, and I do have a question about it, because I'm about the paragraph too. So the easiest way to explain it is that yes, this piece of paper says that you have a referral on this date and this time.
this is kind of like your contract with them. Right. Ultimately, what happens is this piece of paper that you yourself take down there and present to the front office of the office that you're going to, sometimes doesn't make it to the billing person that might be behind that door over there. And so then, therefore, they're just going through their natural billing audit looking, saying, oh, well, last time she was here, she used a Indian Health referral. I don't see one this time. That's just one example that it didn't get to the place where it needed to. Another example is, because we're not electronic, that is a downfall for us, because they don't go over electronically unless you fax them, and still it's just a piece of paper to them. And so there's so many things that can happen, Maria, as to why the referral did not get paid. Another one is that the contractor, let's say it's Oklahoma Heart, they didn't send the correct information to Pawnee for a claim to be paid. And it can be something as simple as they might not have filled out one little box. And the only reason I found this out is because when I worked in Purchase Referred Care and I was the case manager there, I would call and follow up on many claims, and they would be like, oh, well, yeah, they sent it, but it's incorrect. I'm like, okay, so do they know that it's incorrect? Nope, they just need to resend it. It just needs to be correct. So that communication sometimes isn't there. And I'm talking about IHS, when Pawnee, before we took over in October.
Okay.
And so that's just a couple of examples of something as simple as a receptionist not taking this and putting it where it needs to be.
Okay.
And getting it to the right person, even if you hand carry it down there.
Okay.
Many, many situations like that. So does that pretty much explain what you were going to say?
Mm-hmm.
I just have a question. So we started October 1 in Purchase Referred Care.
Mm-hmm.
And it says that the first payments just went out this past week. Is that correct?
That's correct.
So Maria mentioned something about collections, because I know that several of our people have been turned to collections in the past through IHS. And there's a letter that that Pawnee would allow us to give to patients with their referral number on it, and you're talking about a safeguard. And is that an option that you have looked at possibly, as the same letter? What's that letter called, Paula? You know what it is. It's the one that says that they can't turn to collections. It has your purchase number on there, and it also has your referral date.
Mm-hmm. And the department's aware of that, and Marge's department's also aware.
Okay, so that could be considered as a possible safeguard if they are utilizing it. It's a letter that comes out from the Health and Human Services, is it?
Mm-hmm.
Department of Health and Human Services, that has your purchase order number on it, and then your name and all your information that you can actually hand to Oklahoma Heart. Let's say that's who you went to, and they're trying to turn you to collections. So my question is are we utilizing that? Because since we haven't paid bills because of some barriers that we had since October 1, have any of our people that you are aware of been turned to collections? Do we know of any of that? Is there a follow-up? Is there any type of, you know, what's the process there, I guess is what I'm trying to say. I know what the process used to be.
I haven't had any complaints on anybody being turned over to collections yet. The only complaints that I have are usually issues of misinformation, since it's new, we took this over, it's new. Those are really the only ones that I've had. I haven't had anyone say they were in collections yet for non-payment. I don't know that we've issued any of the letters that you're speaking of.
Are you aware of the letter that I'm talking
Yes,
about?
yeah. Just recently, yeah.
Okay.
Yes, I am. So that's something that we can sure start utilizing in the future.
By federal law, they're not supposed to balance bill. If you've had an approved referral, they're not supposed to bill you, and certainly not send you for collection.
And that's pretty much what the letter says, Dr.
Yeah.
Shaw.
And
it gives that security. If you actually have that letter, you would feel better about it, saying, you know, and it could be considered a safeguard, I guess you say, you know, that it could go out with every single referral that you approve,
right,
with the purchase order number on there. And I mean, because it is it's a letter from the Department of Health and Human Services. It's not from us,
right,
you know, as far as like, anyways, it's just something that I felt like at the time when I did work there, that it's something that we could send out with every single referral that we did send. Anyways, thank
good
you.
Good suggestion.
Yeah, very good point.
Okay, you want to continue?
Okay. So what's been helpful is that now that the bills are paid, we've been able to, for example, there may be a outside the clinic charge of $300. We obligate that, and we've taken this out of the money we have available to spend, obligated it. Can't spend that $300 until there's been something done. And the bill, the final bill may only be $75. And so what happens after that's paid, our computer system automatically de-obligates the $225 and essentially it goes back into the hopper for other claims. But until that's been paid, and this outside entity, MLR, that we contracted with, scrubs the claims and comes up with the Medicare-like rate, which we're also only obligated to pay by federal law, the money's still obligated. So we just had, to see, this last batch of claims, we had 28,000 in claims obligated and de-obligated 17,000. That's just getting started. And so we'll probably, you know, we are well into the black, just budgeting it. I think we could probably add to that. So, you know, right now we're not in any danger of having in May saying, we don't have any more money, no referrals, sorry. Only life or limb threatening. So we're not looking at having to that. You know, we always hear about either IHS or a tribe ran low on PRC or contract health plans and couldn't do anything after June or July for the last quarter of the year. So we're not in that situation yet. We're just 4.5 months into this, but we feel optimistic right now. We're being conservative. We are sponsoring ACA plans for some of our patients, people that have no resources, if you say, for example, need a $10,000 elective surgery that we're obligated to pay because they're the proper tribe in our district. So we have a consultant to assist us with trying to see what all the other resources that we could bring to bear, because we are the payer of last resort. I mean, we pay after every other insurance company of any type is paid, whether it be Medicaid, Medicare. Now, the ACE plan is basically an IHS.gov plan, anyone could buy at IHS.gov. But we can pay the premiums for those plans for those patients who have low income, and some of those have no cost sharing. They just didn't know they were eligible, and they qualify. And all of a sudden, they have insurance. And if we sent a referral and someone who has that plan, there is no deductible or coinsurance payable, and it's completely covered. And so we conserve those monies in the PRC plan. So if it was a $10,000 surgery, and we sponsored them for 3 months, they got the surgery done, then we unenrolled them, and we paid $1,000 in premiums, we just conserved $9,000. PRC fund.
The plan you're talking about in particular, can individuals enroll themselves in those plans and stay on them continuously throughout
the
year?
Yes, they could. At the time we unenroll or disenroll, they could take it over if they wanted to. And certainly if you're not paying anything and we're not paying anything, that never changes. We don't have to disenroll because there's no cost sharing. Cost sharing is with the patient's responsibility.
That's an income-based plan, so it's
income-based, 300%. I think 300% of the federal poverty level below, there's no cost sharing. Some people just don't know. We've had a lot of people get enrolled.
Yes, just for the listening audience and you too, Ms. Maria, the one thing that Native Americans get to utilize with the ACA, which we're talking about this insurance, is that there's no open enrollment for Native Americans. So let's say that you want to have that surgery and you get the surgery done and you go to your PT and you get cleared from your surgeon and you're free to go, you can stop your insurance and not pay your premium. And then next month, let's say you have a gallbladder attack the following month, you can sign up again for it. You can sign up 1 month and get off the same month and sign up the next month. That's something that Native Americans may not know, so for our listening audience, that you have the ability to do that. So if you had something come up that would be elective and you wanted to look into getting some help with some insurance, we have that ability as Native Americans to do that.
So if you're not Native American, you have to wait till open enrollment once a year.
That's right. And it is based on elective emergencies, and it's harder to do if you can't.
Yes.
It has to be something you plan for.
Yes.
Yes, be paid within a certain time frame before you have your surgery.
You guys are so smart about all these things.
I want to add to that too, that the tribe is also doing that with employees. Uh-huh. They're also flipping to ACA when they have surgeries and stuff. So it's a cost sharing to the insurance plan.
The only other thing I'll mention here that I wanted to see what Danny might want to report is, remember the Summer Health Careers Program? And we've conducted it for 2 summers now, and this Congress appropriated the money again last September to put that program on again. Remember, its goal was 6 students, expose them to academic enrichment, health careers through our facilities and our patients and following our providers. There's another program that's available this summer in Tulsa called American Indian Health Immersion Camp. It's going to be for 10 days, and I had thoughts about maybe using those monies to sponsor these kids at camp, because it's about $3,500 each. Using OSU's Clinical Simulation Center, using their faculty for the academic enrichment, staying in college dormitories either in Tulsa or at Roger State and Claremore, and rotating through IHS facilities, urban facilities, tribal facilities, as well as exposure to American Indian Health Policy, just an intro course for juniors and seniors in high school. Our goal is really American Indian Health Immersion, and hopefully these students will come out the other side interested in a health career, and when they're finished with their training, they'll come back, because we need them. Our workforce in Indian Country, just as Jeff told you today, is suffering, and certainly just as bad up in the Northern Plains. I don't know how many of you said that, saw that special on Predator on the Reservation, PBS, the other night. There was a physician who was suspected pedophile, was worked in IHS for a number of years. Long story short, that's an example of the workforce deficiencies they have in some Indian health facilities, IHS and tribal, that they had, that they would relax their requirements to allow someone like that in. That was television. So we have vacancies to address in the physician workforce in Indian Country. That's what this program's like. So I don't know whether I'll do anything. If I do, I might approach someone about whether or not if I can get some support. We would probably have to amend that bill to be able to repurpose those monies. So they can't just be used to pay some of the program. But I might approach one of you about that and see if you're interested in something like that. I think it's a higher quality program than we have, and I'd just like to see how it does this summer. So,
okay, Congresswoman Goodloss.
So that's for juniors and seniors. What's your all's? Did you have six spots? Did you have anyone? Did you turn away people last year or the year before?
First year, I believe they turned away one, and last year. One was a high school graduate, but not into college yet.
Okay.
So we haven't had to turn away many yet. You know, these students are like, what am I gonna do this summer? I'm gonna be in school in July. That's why we offered a stipend. You know, if you make some money, you're not entirely without income. In this other program, the summer program, I was talking about Tulsa, that offers a stipend. That's what part of the price per student is, because I just say, I got to work, I got to pay for my insurance, I got to make my car payments, I got to do this or that. Hey, do you want to go to an academic program? And you've just got a lot of competing priorities for these adolescents. And I just felt like we've got to have things to be able to attract them and retain them long enough, hopefully that when they've got, they're listening long enough that we can make a change.
So do you all have you have criteria for who you're looking at and who applies and
they apply through the Osage Nation HR website.
Okay, and if you do come to eventually you could come to, like, say someone, you fill a spot with juniors and seniors and you have 13 people apply for six spots and then X amount get not accepted the next year. They reapply as a senior. Will they have like a, I don't really how to say this, that the same people aren't getting to take advantage of this for 2 years when there's been people waitlisted or people that didn't get accepted the year before? Of course, I guess you're looking at their grades too.
We'd have to look at their grades. Obviously, okay. We don't have anybody. If we have just the exact number of people and we only have five, yeah. We won't be looking at grades, they just need to be enrolled in high school. But if we had more applicants than spots, yes, we would have to look at transcripts.
Okay. And, I don't even know that, like, if you have three people apply, I don't know, I feel kind of differently. Like, I would think that she would still look at grades because if you have someone who is really struggling in math and science and they want to apply for this because they think they want to be a doctor and they're already struggling as a junior or senior, quarter?
There's a minimum requirement.
I guess that's my question. Realistically, what are the chances that they're going to be, and keeping in mind, you know, I want to encourage our kids, but if someone's got C's and D's as a senior and they had C's and D's as a junior.
They wouldn't make the minimum requirement.
Okay, that was my question. So there is a minimum requirement?
Yes.
Okay.
It's awful hard to have spots unfilled, though.
Yeah.
I can tell you that. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that would be a discussion.
I hear your point loud and clear.
What's interesting is to find out what barriers those kids have that we don't know about as to why maybe they're lacking.
Ms. Tulshe?
Yeah.
One of the things when you talk about people who have struggled, how many of us have known people that when we were in high school, junior and senior year, seem to have struggled and come out with a master's degree? It's all of what it is that you have that you really want to do and how much you will project yourself to get the goal that you want. So sometimes those people who are sophomores, juniors, and seniors, they have just struggled through high school. And they end up, I have more than one friend that ended up professors in college, master's degrees, because once they got out of the environment of this small community and got away from friends that they followed.
Barriers.
And they had an interest in doing what they were doing. They proceeded and were very successful. Maybe not in medicine, but in some other areas. So sometimes those people are just struggling and they haven't found their niche yet.
I want to add though that the students that applied the last couple of years while I was there had phenomenal resumes, high aptitudes and straight A's and really, really were exceptional students.
And they're doing very well in college right now.
I don't
want
to be a doctor.
What'd you say?
I have a master's degree, but I couldn't be a doctor.
You'd be surprised. Yes, I know we're getting long on time. I just wanted to just ask something really quick. We've talked about, you know, finances, and we've talked about options that we're going to have for our people and for others, you know, who come and are served in our community. But I was wondering if the next time that you bring a report, could you please include some goals that the clinic has set, and then any type of departmental goals, and then measure them from the, you know, as at a quarterly or kind of like a QI type of plan also, so that we can see what our patient outcomes are. And the reason I ask that is because, and not only that, your billing outcomes too, not just, you know, financial, so that this is a great report, don't get me wrong, but when we can see it to compare it to 2017-18, during the month of February, you know, where were we at last year at this time, and where were we at maybe, because if you do that on a period every month, then you can see us trending up, trending down, and you do have a few things in here on a monthly thing. But I was looking at patient outcomes also. I didn't see any, and in a spirit of transparency, you know, when a constituent comes to me and they say, you know, they either hate the clinic or they love it. There's kind of no in between. I was done wrong or I was done so good. And so if there would be some ability to find, whether it be on our websites or whatever, some statistical data of patient outcomes that we have, you know, that we have compared to last year at this time or the quarter before, where I can say, you know, well, the Wajaji Health Center, based on the statistical data, you know, is this, you know, to give them another chance to, you know, have you followed the processes that a patient needs to make a complaint, you know, and did you receive the outcome that you needed? Because that's what I do, is I encourage them to follow the process and the policies that you all have in place to help alleviate the problems if a patient does have a complaint. And, you know, I worked there for a year and a half, and so I purposely and consciously separated myself and didn't have a lot to get involved in the last 6 to 7 months, because I wanted to gain some perspective and not have that be so fresh right there as far as separating myself from the clinic and understanding that I am in a different role now, where I'm not actually an employee of the clinic. And so so basically I was just hoping to see some, you know, some QI data possibly of some patient outcomes, so that we could be able to know what our clinic is doing as congressional members, and when we are, you know, a question is brought to us, we can say, well, you know, our data shows this. You can go here to see our data as far as like patient outcomes go. And so it's just something that I think that if we could open people's eyes up to the idea that it's not all bad and that we do offer some great things and we do have some really good patient outcomes, but we are improving and these are our goals and this is where we're trying to get to and this is how we're going to try to get there. It's just a thought that I think that it would help our community if they were more knowledgeable and we would have a place to send them to become more knowledgeable. And then they might know what questions to ask, because I found out that even working in the clinic, sometimes they just didn't even know what question to ask. They just wanted to complain, and a lot of times it was something as simple as they didn't realize that it was a simple process over here that and that took care of it. And so it's just a thought that I think it would help to educate, therefore they would feel more empowered and feel more involved.
Okay. We are running long on time, so did Daniel have anything?
I've completed my report.
Okay. Daniel, do you have anything you wanted to report or talk about?
I'll just say that I'm very glad to be here. I've been in the program for most of my career. I worked for a decade for the Tonkawa tribe. I managed their housing office, and I also managed their social services as well. Went back to school, got a double bachelor's in human resource development and healthcare administration. And also back got an MBA, so I'm very excited to be able to use the skills that I acquired in school and put them to actual work here for the Osage people. It's a real blessing for me to be here. I know the Ponca people and Osage people have a very, very close relationship that dates back years and years, so it's humbling to be over here. So I won't go long into my report or anything since we are beyond time, but I do focus more on the business side of the health clinic, trying to find ways to be more efficient from a business perspective. I spend a lot of time reviewing financial data, patient data. I do compile a monthly report that's provided to the health authority board that perhaps could reach out further, like Congresswoman Lemon said, to your constituents if need be. Just reviewing the different departments, how we performed that month compared to last month or last year. So those are kind of things that I work on. Since I have a background in HR, I do spend a lot of time on staff development, trying to help employees develop their skills, things of that nature. So if I can be of any help to the Congress, please don't hesitate to ask. I look forward to working with you in the future.
All right, thank you very much. Are there any other comments or questions from the committee?
Motion to adjourn.
All right.
Second.
Second. All in favor?
Yes.
Yes.
Yes, we are adjourned. Thank you all very much.
You want this?
Yeah. Thanks. So this is what you do every month?
Mm-hmm. I'll have a new one this Thursday for January.